to nationalize this sport in the way they're doing it, I think is a mistake, and I think they're going to regret it. I mean, it's kind of what like NASCAR did a little bit 20 years ago, where it's like, oh, everybody loves original sport. Let's put a bunch of tracks in Phoenix and just see what happens. Or put tracks in Chicago and see what happens. No, it's about the regionality of it, and there's an ecosystem there. And if you get away from what you are, things start to devolve pretty quickly.
Hello and welcome in. It's Always College Football. It is Monday, April 8th, and we are deep in the weeds on spring football here at Always College Football. I'm your host, Greg McElroy, alongside always Jack Foster, Mark Kubiak, Jack Schrail, and of course, Jake Garcia, who does a great job for us as well. We have a really fun show for you. We are going to welcome in a guest host. We did a two-part series. One, that'll be on This Is Football. You can check that out with Kevin Clark. Talked a little drafts, talked a little quarterbacks, and then now we have a chance to talk with Kevin Clark, who's a Miami fan, by the way. Talk with him a little bit about what college football looks like through the lens of a fan and a guy that mostly covers the NFL. So look forward to our visit with him. And then we will break down four key spring games from this past Saturday. Clemson was on the field. Things to like, things to not like. Auburn was on the field. Things to like, things to not like. We'll also hit NC State, and we'll hit new member of the Power Five and member of the ACC, SMU as well. So a lot that we need to get to. Continue to ask all of you to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show. You also can watch us on the ESPN YouTube channel, so hit that thumbs up button if you're at the ESPN YouTube channel. We very much appreciate you. Subscribe to the ESPN College Football YouTube channel as well. So without much further ado, let's welcome him on. He is the host of This Is Football. It's Kevin Clark. Welcome to part two of the mashup that you didn't know you needed. Always College Football and This Is Football. Combining forces here. Kevin Clark with me here. Just talked in part one with Kevin. You can check it out on This Is Football. Awesome podcast. Dive into the drafts a little bit. Talking a little quarterbacks. If you're interested in quarterback play, if you're interested in what the draft might look like, Drake May versus Jaden Daniels versus Caleb Williams, then you can find that on This Is Football. It's part of the Omaha family of podcasts here. But Kev, we're going to dive into some college football here. And I know, look, I know you major in the NFL, but it's hard not to be paying attention to all the things that are going down in college football, especially as a guy that went to Miami. Am I wrong? Yeah. Like, you got to be paying a lot of attention to this.
I mean, when you grow up, and Greg, you know this, like, I can't escape it. Like, even if I'm trying to say, like, all right, this is not a college football weekend for me, I got to hone in the NFL. Like, it's a religion for me. Like, when you grow up in Florida, you go to Publix on Saturday morning, that's what you're talking about. So, no, I am, unfortunately, for my sins, addicted to college football.
Well, as a Miami Hurricane, though, you right now, with where we're at, are technically on the outside looking in from the Big Two, right? The Big Ten and the SEC. The good news is Miami is probably at or near the top of the rest of the college football landscape, alongside Clemson, North Carolina, Notre Dame. Notre Dame's probably at the top, let's be real. But, you know, Florida State, Miami, Clemson, you name it, in that next tier of teams that would be highly attractive. So from your perspective as a fan, how do you feel about where you sit right now and where the game might ultimately be heading?
Oh my gosh. Miami needs to get good and quick. Like that's real. Like they need to establish themselves as a team that cannot be denied from the Power Two, because I think there's going to be a couple of different tectonic shifts over the next 10 years. I think at some point players, there'll be some sort of agreement where players will be employees. And then I think that wave of alignment will make this one look like child's play. Because I think you're going to see a couple of teams who are in power conferences say, we don't want to do this, or we don't want to revenue share or whatever. I mean, Jack Swarbrick said this 5 years ago, that he thinks that at some point there'll be a schism between the teams that want to play semi-pro football and amateur teams. And I think that once Miami needs to be good before that happens, okay? And I think they will be, because this is a talent acquisition business. Mario Cristobal is really good at talent acquisition. I think the modern game is changing so much. I mean, I think we're going to look back at Florida State, Greg, at last year as the first modern college football team, where they went out and they have, what, 7 or 8 draftable guys, almost all of whom I believe are transfers. That's what the modern game is going to be. Miami's going to be at the forefront of that, because NIL, at the end of the day, is a contest for who has the most shady billionaires, and Miami will always win that competition. So I think for me, I actually don't worry too much. I don't have that much anxiety about what happens the next 2 years. I think there's going to be something in the next 8 to 10 years that will change college football forever. And that's the wave you want to be included in, because I think that there's no, you know, one of the funny things about college football, one of the reasons we love it is the rules never made any sense. Like it, I mean, come on, like imagine explaining this to someone who didn't grow up in it, why the players weren't paid for so long, what the conferences are, all that stuff. Right. And now they're trying to paper over those rules with rules just to stop the leaks. And those rules don't make any sense either. So at some point there's going to be a uniformity. We're starting to see it now. It's already going on in the courts. And for me, Miami will be good by the time that happens. So I have very little status anxiety as far as that goes.
So you work primarily on NFL, and the transfer portal has been a hot topic of debate. It's polarizing to an extent, because while I, granted, went to Alabama, Power 5 guy, was a developmental guy. You know, if I were coming out nowadays, I'd probably have to go to a smaller school, develop, play, and then maybe transfer up. That's just kind of the way things are going. Unless you're a super top tier, you know, high level prospect, that's kind of the route that you're having to take. So looking at the draft, for example, since you're deep in the weeds on that, how much time are you spending on the G5, the group of five, the schools that are a little bit smaller? Because it's, I mean, last year, I believe there wasn't a G5 player taken until the 60 plus picks. I mean, because all those guys are now transferring up to the big schools. So how big is that gap as you evaluate the personnel on those teams versus the teams at the top? How big is that gap right now?
As someone who loves all levels of college football, it's heartbreaking because the gap is massive. Okay, just let's think about Osiris Torrance, who was the 59th pick last year, went from Louisiana to Florida. Let's think about Braden Fisk, who could have just gone to West, I mean, we'll use the Florida State example. Jared Verse and Braden Fisk in another life would have just stayed at their schools. Jared Verse obviously could have moved up because he was at Albany, but Braden Fisk was at Western Michigan, and he's a guy who would have been a MAC legend his last year. You know, it would have been stories about him. That just doesn't happen anymore, and it's heartbreaking. And I think you're seeing the transfer portal have so many different effects at so many different levels of football. I asked a GM last summer if the portal was having any impact on how things are changing evaluation wise. And he said, there's two things. Number one is the smaller guys move up, but then there's kind of twofold things that the Alabamas and the Georgias of the world. The first one being you can't count on them having been de-recruited. And what I mean by that is if a guy goes to Alabama, if a guy goes to LSU, if a guy goes to Georgia, it didn't necessarily happen like it would have in 2012 that they got him on, or Ohio State, and then they got him on campus on the first day and said, you're nothing, you're never going to play here. Maybe there's a little more coddling at the top programs. And then the other part of it is guys are going where they can play. For me, I think that most people see that as a positive, that a Tyreek Stevenson can go from Georgia to Miami and play and be a second round pick, that a Jermaine Johnson can do that. And so guys are finding their level, which to me, quarterback wise, I mean, you think about, I've said this a million times, Matt Castle got drafted having just practiced at USC. He would have gone and played at Utah. He would have gone and played if he were born in 2000, he would have gone and played at Texas Tech, something like that. They would have seen it. So I think the GMs see it as a positive. Now there's a couple funny things, and this has gotten a little bit, they can swat this away, but like a couple of GMs have said players who've transferred have come up to them and said, hey, what, in the meetings, and said, hey, what can you do for me? And like, no, this is, we're not pitching you, pal. That's over. But I think that the G5 thing to me is heartbreaking, because I know when no one thinks of them this way, but like I grew up in Orlando where UCF was just trying to make it. And they would, the biggest thing in the world would be when Virginia Tech came to town or Purdue would come to town for these recruiting things. And you would get to see a squad with NFL guys, Brandon Marshall, Dante Culpepper, obviously. You get to see a team like that give it a go. And now, and obviously UCF's in a different situation, but the version of that now, FAU, FIU, whatever it is, it's almost like if they get a player, he's ready to transfer. And this stuff, I mean, like, not to blow the lid off of anything, but like in basketball, certainly you hear stories about, you know, a guy has a nice non-conference schedule or whatever in basketball, and he's already got a deal for the next year to go somewhere else. And it's like, that to me is the craziest thing, where it's like, there's some of these guys, as you mentioned, Greg, who are going to these smaller schools just to get a look. It's like they're the new JUCOs.
It really is in a lot of ways. I hadn't really thought of it that way. I mean, as an Alabama guy, this is fresh. But I look at our team. I mean, Aaron Estrada from Hofstra. Mark Sears from Ohio. Grant Nelson from North Dakota State. I mean, a Final Four team that was comprised of guys that weren't there the year before, in some cases, that all of a sudden go to Bama, come together, and make a run at a national championship. So you're definitely seeing it in basketball. You're seeing it in football as well. Of all the changes that have gone down since you graduated 10, 12, 15 years ago, what would be the change you liked the most about college football, and what's the thing that you like the least?
Oh, man, that's a great question. The NIL thing is great, because for the heartbreaking thing to me was a guy who was good enough to play for a Gators national championship and score touchdowns, and Alabama, you know, a left tackle who wasn't quite big enough, didn't get there, but, you know, was a legend, never had to buy a beer in Tuscaloosa or Birmingham for the rest of his life. Those guys, right? They leave the game of football, at which they basically got to the very top. They just weren't big enough or strong enough or fast enough to get to the tippy top. And they leave the game without enough money to buy a mortgage on a house, or to buy, put a down payment on a house. That to me was always, you'd see these guys in training camp the next year and in the NFL, and I'd say, hey, this guy 8 months ago was returning kicks in the national championship game, or this guy was the rotational defensive end for the best defensive line in the country. And then they'd be the first guys cut. And it's like the old thing about how, you know, they get the first wave of cuts, and even after rookie minicamp in June, a lot of times there are statues of those guys in the hometown of where they are, and they're the first cut, and we've never even seen that. And I think I was, when I was in Flowery Branch for the Atlanta Falcons, I parked at Flowery Branch High School, and somebody told me there's literally a shrine to Connor Shaw there. And it's like, I love Connor Shaw, but like, that's what you think about it, where it's like, Connor Shaw didn't have much of an NFL career, but it's like, in his hometown, he's a god. And what I love about NIL now is that those guys can make, in some cases, seven figures. Those guys now can make 800,000. You think about a guy like Jordan Travis, who has real, obviously, issues with his leg, how that's going to progress. Well, the good news is he's going to leave the game, if he doesn't take a snap in the NFL, with high six figures, which I like. So I like the NIL part of it. I think bringing the NIL and the transfer portal at the same time was a real shock to the system. I'm hoping there's a scenario, Greg, in which you get to a point where these are maybe 2 year deals, where you'd have to do something as far as employment goes, but like 2 year deals, maybe 3 year deals, transfer for the last year, almost like what you used to have, where if you were a graduate transfer, you could go without penalty. Like at some point, there's going to have to be give backs on that. So the transfer portal I like the least, because as you mentioned, like it's just the G5 has been obliterated. Coaches are doing stuff. I don't know if you saw this quote from Dan Hurley yesterday, but he said the best thing about national championship run is he doesn't have to deal with the transfer portal. And he's not joking. Like that is like the stress of these guys, the stress of these coaches, where they have to babysit these guys all the time. And I was talking to somebody about Miami Spring the other day, and they're saying, hey, you know, this guy might not be here, this guy will be here. And it's like, can we just get with our team at some point and just find out what we have? That to me is the biggest stress. So I hate the transfer portal, but until the NCAA or the conferences get together and figure out a way for that not to happen, to give the players enough to where they stay for 3 years, I think you're just going to see that more and more. So love NIL, hate the portal, wish there was a way to fix it.
Well, I think those are all really well said. It's hard to disagree with any of it too. I mean, there are aspects of the NFL or the NIL that I love, but there are also aspects that I hate. I don't love that it's being used as an inducement to recruit. I understand it's a necessary evil, and it just kind of is what it is. But at the same time, like if I were a player on campus and they're bringing in some hotshot freshman that hasn't proven anything and he's making 10 times what I'm making, that to me is frustrating. And the locker room dynamic is something that would be frustrating as well. So I wish that it were, hey, a meritocracy. You're paid on what you've done, as opposed to getting paid on what you could do, but there's nothing you can do about it. It is what it is.
Do you think if you were born in 2000 and not 1988, that there was a point in which you would have transferred?
No, probably not. Because I could see, I mean, it would depend a little bit on you know, who else was being brought in at the position, who else, because I chose Alabama. If football didn't work out, like, that's where I wanted to go to school. You know what I mean? So it was kind of, that was back in the day where it's like, man, I really liked the business school. you know, the quad's really nice. Like, oh, fraternity and Greek life's really cool. Like, I really like downtown. I mean, the things that mattered back then are very different than things that matter now. So I'd like to say that I would not have transferred, but then again, I mean, it's tough to kind of look back and envision the world that I lived in and apply it to the world that they're living in today. So I think it's a fair question. I just don't think I would have, but then again, I mean, shoot, if Michigan came and offered me seven figures right. to go play quarterback there, it'd probably be hard for me not to think about it. You know what I mean? Or any school for that matter. Looking at where we might be heading. Now, you cover the NFL primarily. It does look like college football is moving towards an NFL model. Mm-hmm. Now, it's just a matter of how many teams are in the college first football version of the NFL. So some people have said 80. Some people have said 65. Some people have said 40, because right now the SEC and the Big Ten are 34.
Yeah.
What if they just go to 40? Who would be on the outside looking in, and then everybody else would be relegated to college football as we know it today. And those teams that are currently comprised of the SEC, Big Ten, and whatever else would be included, they would be elevated to a league kind of their own. So if they were to do that and follow the NFL, do you think college football would be able to find similar success that the NFL has found as far as numbers, viewership, and just casual audience?
No. They need to have as many teams as possible and make it more of a national product. I believe that college football runs on like hate and spite in the most beautiful way in the world. Like, I think there's two things that the college football is making a mistake on. Number one is expanding the playoff, because for me, one of the things that makes you feel alive about college football is that when the clock is ticking and there's 8 seconds left and Miami's about to lose their second game of the season, I know that I might have a heart attack because we're about to, you know, some years are more likely than others, but they're about to be removed from the national championship race. That sucks. That really sucks. And you're going to remove that feeling, the heart pounding feeling, because you're going to go, okay, well, we lost our second game, but maybe we can still sneak into Charlotte, maybe still get the auto bye as long as Louisville loses this game. Like, that, it's a little more NFL-ish. That hurts. So then you have a situation where the only thing that's going to keep it college football is the rivalries, and those are going away. What if Florida State joins the Big Ten next year and Miami and Florida State don't play for the next decade? That, I know Florida State fans don't think that that's a big deal. They'll miss it. What if they don't play Florida? I think there's a legislature thing that makes them play. But, like, I'm just saying, what if things change so much that there's no real rivalries? And so the thing that college football runs on is – just kind of those interconnected things, and being around the water cooler in Atlanta and in Charlotte, and knowing that if we lose this game this weekend, my South Carolina friends are going to destroy me. That's what college football runs on. NFL is a little bit different deal. And so I think that they need to remember that this is a regional sport that becomes national when you tie it all together. You cannot just give Ohio State versus USC every week and expect that to appeal to the diehards. Now, it'll appeal to some casual fans, but it's not the same. To nationalize this sport in the way they're doing it, I think, is a mistake, and I think they're going to regret it. I mean, it's kind of what, like, NASCAR did a little bit 20 years ago, where it's like, oh, everybody loves our original sport. Let's put a bunch of tracks in Phoenix and just see what happens. Let's put tracks in Chicago and see what happens. No, it's about the regionality of it, and there's an ecosystem there. And if you get away from what you are, things start to devolve pretty quickly. And so I don't think they're going to have that kind of success, and I would tread very carefully if I was the Big Ten and the SEC. Now, I've seen the theory, Greg, that in 15 years, all of these regional rivalries will be back under the Big Ten and SEC umbrellas, that the Pac-12 will be back together under the Big Ten, like all that stuff. I've seen that theory, but before that, there's going to be a lot of pain. And I just think that I wish that the people running college football loved college football as much as we did. And I sometimes get the feeling that they don't, and that is what scares me a little bit.
I think those are very fair concerns. The do or die nature of the sport is something that I think can't be replicated. Like, as a diehard Cowboy fan, like, if we lost to the Eagles in week 14, it's like, you know, we get them in 17. Yeah. Like, we'll get them in week 17. We're good. Like, if we handle their business there, it's fine. Like, am I disappointed when we lost? Sure, but not to the same extent as when my team in college loses. Finally, we'll get you out of here on this. You touched on it briefly. 12-team playoff. It's modeling itself a little bit after the NFL. I do think the first round buys will be beneficial. I don't know if they're the end of the world because of the layoff. I mean, in the NFL, you play week 17. In some cases, maybe you sit your starters out, but you don't have that long of a time frame in which you're sitting out. In college football, you might not play for a month. And I think rust would build up. So I don't know if the first round buys are going to be as big going into it as we're thinking they are right now. And I think playing maybe a G5 team in round one would be more beneficial than actually having a bye. Granted, yeah, you could lose, but at the same time, in all likelihood, you probably won't. So with the way we're structuring the 12-team playoff, do you think it'll be a success? And will the first-round buys, just looking at NFL history, will the first-round buys be as beneficial as we think they might be?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, six to me was the perfect amount of teams for a playoff situation. Now, for me, I think that the game is going to change so much as far as like how much depth is important. If you're playing 15, 16 games, I think that is so important. And so I think the bye is going to be massive because of that, because Georgia is going to be less deep than ever because they're losing guys to the portal. And yet you need more depth than ever because you're going to be playing more games than ever. So the bye actually is important in that regard. To me, the biggest thing about the if you're the 5 seed, which I think a lot of teams are going to want to play the worst team in the playoff. To me, the biggest part of that is that you get a home playoff game and it's going to be a huge party on your campus. You're going to be able to use that for recruiting. I mean, who's not? People are going to say, oh, who wants to go to Happy Valley in January? Everybody does. That'd be really fun. People love cold weather playoff games. So I think that the system as currently set up, I think the buys are huge because the good teams just have less depth. And I also think they're just going to start to be a different game. Do you rest guys early on because you know you're going to need them bigger? More, you know, you're going to need them when you're not playing Kent State in the first round. The game theory on that, I think, is going to be really important. We've never seen college teams play the amount of games that some of these teams are going to have to play. And so I think that load management, game management, understanding when to take your foot off the gas, I think it's going to be more important than ever. So I would want the bye, but I also understand it's going to be a massive party, a massive recruiting boon to have those home games in the first round. I just hope one thing I hope is that the schools and the conferences are able to effectively break the contracts get out of the contracts with the Bulls and have as many games on campus as possible, because that's what college football is. And that would help make this a true national event, national party, instead of these kind of neutral field, almost like the NCAA tournament things where things are half filled in Indianapolis or Atlanta or something like that. Make this truly special. And that to me means games on campus.
Yeah, I think it's terrific stuff, man. This has been an awesome visit. We appreciate you. You can check out all of Kevin's stuff on This Is Football with Kevin Clark. It's just terrific. Does a great job previewing the draft, all things NFL, dives into some college as well. Clearly a big college fan, certainly has his finger on the pulse. Kev, this was great. We'll do it again, my friend. Really look forward to it.
What about the Cowboys this year?
They're awful, right? If I watch ESPN every day, they're awful. Like, they have no chance ever to be good ever again. But no, of course, they're going to be in the mix. I mean, winning games in the playoffs is hard. And I think that the whole thing, well, Dak can't get it done and all this other stuff, like that, I feel like it's low-hanging fruit. But then again, I'm kind of the optimist when it comes to football and my teams and my sports. Like, I'm going to find the silver lining. So, yeah, sure. I hope they play better in the playoffs moving forward. But is Dak all of a sudden going to become Patrick Mahomes overnight? Probably not. Patrick's won 3 Super Bowls, so it's probably going to be hard to bring home the big one unless things improve significantly on the defensive side.
I can't wait to find out which college team is going to be the Cowboys of the 16-team playoff. Just get there every year and just lose. Like maybe Penn State, maybe a little James Franklin there. Just get in and then never get to the Final Four.
Well, based on track record, yes, that might be a team that would be under significant Cowboy consideration. If we're going to talk about that. Yeah, he's struggled against top teams, that's for sure. That's a narrative that we've certainly visited a few times here on Always College Football. But, man, this has been great, and look forward to do it again. So check out all your stuff at This Is Football. You can get it anywhere you get your podcasts. We appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, Greg.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Little spring game recap from this past weekend. I know a lot of eyes were on the Final Four. I understand that a lot of people are consuming other events. You got the Masters coming up this upcoming weekend, but it's spring football season here on Always College Football. And as you guys know, look, we don't draw crazy conclusions from spring games. We just don't. It's just, if I had a dollar for every time I said, oh my gosh, this wide receiver that went off is going to be an All-American. And then we fast forward to the fall and he catches 17 passes for 220. And it's like, well, all right, so much for that preseason prognostication. You know, you got to take some things with a slight grain of salt, look for variables, look for things that you might be able to build upon. But I can remember too, goodness gracious, I mean, how many times have we watched offensive lines in the spring game and the pass rush, like you can't even get a pass off. You know what I mean? Like the tackles are just getting destroyed. It's like, oh God, they can't block a soul. And the next thing you know, we fast forward to the fall and that group's in the mix for the Joe Moore Award. I mean, it's like, be careful with being overly reactionary to college football spring games. As much as I'm in the line of work of being a part of these spring games. Like I'll be calling the Alabama spring game in a couple days and I want you to watch. Absolutely. Tune in. ESPN, 4 o'clock Eastern time. Everybody tune in. I'll be on the call alongside Dave Pasch and Molly McGrath. So it's fun to watch. It's fun to be a part of. But if you draw major conclusions from a spring performance, it can be a little misleading. So we'll start there. But we also had some teams this past weekend, one in particular that has legitimate college football playoff aspirations. That team, the Clemson Tigers. We'll start there, okay? Few things that we need to start with. Let's start with the quarterback situation. Cade Klubnik entered into the starting quarterback job at Clemson as the next Trevor Lawrence, as the next Deshaun Watson, who was so highly regarded coming out of high school. He's just going to walk right on. He's going to be perfect. He's going to be every bit as good as the guy. I tell you what, they need to be looking over. The DJ Uiagalelei needs to be looking over his shoulder because this guy is going to ultimately replace him. Let's be real. Well, he was thrust in the lineup. There were some good moments there, especially in the ACC title game a couple years ago. But since then, it's just been a little up and down, hadn't it? And the spring game felt a little like that too. Now, it does look like there were aspects of his game that have kind of improved. But at the same time, when he throws a pick on the second drive, there were a couple of things early where it's like, has there been progress? And I thought things down the road, it certainly showed some signs of improvement. He looks a little more comfortable, I feel like, down the stretch. But there are still those moments where it's like, all right, man, it's year three. It's year three now. We got to start eliminating some of the mistakes. We got to eliminate some of the inconsistencies. And that just hasn't quite materialized just yet. A couple things I also look at, too, when assessing spring games. Who are some of the young guns that look like they might be the real deal? And unfortunately for Cade Klubnik, if you look at Trent Pierman, everybody after the spring game, everyone's sitting there saying, oh boy, hang on a second, this guy might be better than Klubnik. Well, Trent Pierman looked like a guy that is poised to become a big time player, but is it going to be today? I have a hard time envisioning that. But there's a lot of things to like about what we've seen from him. There's a little bit from an athletic standpoint, nice run there, nice long run there in the game as well. So he looks good, and in the event in which Klubnik doesn't take that next step, maybe a guy like Pearman might be in a position to potentially close that gap. I also like to look at other positions of note, other newcomers that might be thrust into a significant role. And one guy that really jumped out, Bryant Wesco. We've talked for a while now, right? It's been a couple years. But we've talked for a while, if there's one position group from Clemson that is not quite what it used to be, it's not on the defensive side. All three levels of the defense are still very good and will be again this year. It's not really at running back. They've been really good at running back. Offensive line, I think, has been comparable to what they've always been. Maybe not the best offensive line in the sport, but very solid, solid group from left to right more often than not, but the wide receiver position has not been up to par. Now, they've had some injuries in the past that have helped contribute to some of those challenges, but when you look at what we might be getting from Bryant Wesco, he could be the next guy up. You know, maybe he's a guy that early in his career goes out and makes a name for himself, and we've seen freshmen do it the last couple of years. For Clemson, Tyler Brown last year, Antonio Williams the year before. We've seen freshmen do it in the past. And if you can add Wesco alongside the aforementioned two, what you're going to get at the tight end position and a bruising running back with Maffa and a speedster like Cole Turner, maybe this wide receiver group can start to resemble some of the teams we've seen in the past from Clemson. So very optimistic with some of the things I saw, but like I said, not going to lose my mind over a slightly up and down performance from a guy their most probably their hopes mostly ride on, and that's Cade Klubnik. We'll move next to the Plains. The Auburn Tigers were underway this past weekend, and while it took a little while for the offense to get going, our number one takeaway from this evaluation of the spring game will not be the kicking game. Okay? I know 7-for-7 on field goals is great. A 54-yarder to win it in walk-off fashion, amazing. But Auburn's red zone woes might be a little bit more of a concern for me. And I look at where they're at, okay? I look at Peyton Thorne. I was hoping I might get a little bit more from him. Did have some athleticism. We've seen that in the past. I still think his legs will be part of the equation, but it's hard to get a sense as to just how comfortable he is. However, I know this. Auburn's offensive line last year was pretty solid down the stretch. It didn't look that way on Saturday, but at the same time, that's not a group I'm going to lose a lot of sleep over. The one area that I was really intrigued by was the wide receiver position for Auburn. That's been a position, we just talked about Clemson, that's been a position though for Auburn that has long been a massive question mark. I mean, when was the last time Auburn had a legitimate wide receiver that you were legit scared of? Like, hey, that guy can take over the game. We better double cover him. We cannot handle him in a one-on-one situation. When was the last time we saw that from Auburn? It's been a while, a long while, probably 4 years. Maybe less. Maybe there's been a guy more recently, but I'm blanking on him at the moment. Well, I'm not only super intrigued by what we saw from the blue chip recruit Cam Coleman, I also think there's some other guys that I'm starting to feel pretty good about. I mean, the group as a whole feels different. Now, Cam Coleman, he's going to be a stud. Like, we know that. It's only a matter of time. Will he be, you know, day one best receiver on the field? I don't know that just yet, but I'm really encouraged by Robert Lewis. I'm really encouraged by the transfer Sam Jackson, who played quarterback at Cal last year, back to wide receiver, and he might be in a position to do some good things this year in a catch-and-run situation and as kind of a versatile piece that they use in the offense sparingly in a bunch of different roles. I also think Camden Brown is a guy that 2 years ago I was sitting there talking with the previous staff, and they're like, this guy is a guy that is probably our best guy. He's not ready to be the dude just yet, but he's probably our most naturally gifted, most talented player at the position. He's a guy that I'm real interested in because maybe now the light has finally gone on. He's ready to step up and to become a more consistent and more reliable difference maker there on the perimeter. So very encouraged by that revelation. And then the defensive line, I think that was huge. Now, sometimes you don't want your defensive line to look great in a spring game because that might be at the detriment of your own offensive line, but you look at the depth that Auburn has now along the front. Jason Jones, Gage Keys, Trill Carter, the transfer from Texas, Jamison Travis, Kendrick Falk, Jalen McLeod. It feels like they're deeper along the defensive line than they've been in a while, which is a really good spot to start, especially in the SEC. If you can have a disruptive group up front, you can feel pretty good about it. So all things considered, well, I'm certainly maybe there's a little to be desired from what we saw from the offense. I think the defensive line showed what we wanted to show, and the offensive wide receivers, which is a huge question mark coming into this upcoming year. It looks like that group has progressed nicely so far this year.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And then we'll move to the NC State Wolfpack. Yes, they were playing in the Final Four when this game was going on, I think, thereabouts. That game tipped off at 3 o'clock locally on the Pacific time zone, so maybe they didn't overlap, but I did go back and watch it and checked it out. There's a lot of hype surrounding this NC State program, and rightfully so. I think Tony Gibson, their defensive coordinator, as long as he's there on that side of the ball, they're going to be in really good shape. But if you look at what they have defensively, the first drive, you look at the first drive, you're sitting there thinking to yourself, not great, but they started to settle in. And it was a little hard too, because you had the first team offense against the third team defense. I mean, it's just, there were some times when it was a little tricky to figure out. But if you look at this, man, you don't have some of your best players. Devin Van, Aiden White, Sean Brown. I mean, some of your best players aren't even on the field. And yet you have some guys that are, I mean, another guy too, and Hibbler didn't even suit up. So some of your best players that are known commodities aren't even out there. And yet there's a lot of things to like from what I saw from NC State on that side of the ball. You also have a couple of transfers that are coming in that'll be here in a week or two, maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whenever it is, Donovan Kaufman and Cam Riley, who aren't out there yet either. So to think that this NC State defense is at way less than 100%, and you got a lot of young guys that are being forced into really a good long look during the spring game, and yet I thought they held their own. I mean, I thought they held their own in a lot of ways, which, like I said, could be at a slight detriment to the offense, but at the same time, you got to feel good about what you saw from Kamal Bonner, who's a young guy that they think has a chance. Kelvin McBride, another guy that I think had a really nice day. So there's a lot to like about what NC State has going on the defensive side of the football. Offensively, Grayson McCall, longtime quarterback of the Coastal Carolina squad, he now is at NC State, and while I thought there was some poison accuracy on display, there were a few misses that you would like to clean up as well. I think he's going to be in a really good spot. I mean, very efficient, 16 of 20, couple touchdowns, didn't play in the second half. So I thought, all in all, his first opportunity to really see him was solid. Very, very solid, but that's what you'd expect. I mean, the guy has played a ton of football. He should go out there and look like a veteran. I mean, one of the stars of spring ball, you've heard some buzz kind of all off season about Jordan Waters. He's the running back, a lot of buzz about him and becoming a primary guy, a difference maker at that position. Well, he goes in 7 carries, 69 yards and a touchdown. So I think they have some good depth at running back too. So I'm very encouraged by what I've seen from NC State. I thought it was a solid performance too, especially knowing that you were without some key pieces, and yet both sides of the ball had some really bright moments throughout the day. And then finally, new addition to the ACC, the SMU Mustangs. Got to get into that. The defensive line, first thing I noticed, they are really big and really disruptive. I think they got some guys that are real deal along the defensive line, which is really, really encouraging. Kamar Wheaton can flat out fly. Notice that as well. I mean, he can go, all right? He's had a lot of runs, a lot of great open field plays, definitely an offensive highlight machine. We know Jake Bailey. He was on the field a lot last year. He's still going to be the go-to guy in this offense at the wide receiver spot, so really encouraged by him. But also a couple other guys that I'm encouraged by. Roderick Daniels had a couple of really nice plays, especially over the middle. Jordan Hudson, I thought, had a couple really nice plays as well. So I think SMU is one of those teams. And while it will be a significant step up in competition, going from the AAC, where they had the best roster by a mile, they had the best roster for sure in the ACC. It will be a considerable step up going to the ACC, but at the same time, they are well positioned, have the NIL resources to go out and attract quality pieces, and could be a team that you don't want to mess around with there in the ACC this year, especially if you're one of those teams that has aspirations of not just winning the league, but ultimately getting to the college football playoff. So a good solid spring performance from the SMU Mustangs as well. That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. Please continue to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show. And you can also watch the show on the ESPN YouTube channel. So hit that thumbs up button if you haven't done so already. We appreciate you very, very much. We have a lot to look forward to this week. We're going to visit with Josh Heupel a little later in the week, the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. They are preparing to do their spring game coming up here in just a few days. We have a bunch of spring games to preview coming up this Saturday. It's also Masters Week. We're not going to do any golf here on Always College Football, but you can follow me on Twitter at Greg McElroy, on Instagram. You can do that there as well, Greg McElroy. Tune in. We have a little mashup, a little opportunity for you to get some gear from Holderness and Bourne. They're the official outfitter here of the show, so go check them out on our social media, at Greg McElroy. You can check it out. All you got to do is just tag me and tag Holderness and Bourne Golf USA. You can check those out. Check it out on my social media page. You can get some free gear this weekend, so you can look good for the Masters and you can look good for your spring games as well. So for all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark, Jake, Jack, the other Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have a wonderful day. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.